think we're going to ask Professor Richard Dye to come up and give us a sense of what's going on. Dick?
Thank you, Chairman Kennedy, distinguished trustees, officers of the university, and the rest of us. I'm here to cheer you up. So I represent the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and we've made these presentations fairly regularly. Briefly, I want to talk a little bit about what IGPA has been doing on fiscal topics, but then the meat of it is an overview of the Illinois economy and an overview of the state's fiscal situation, and we'll see where am I pointing this? Where is the machine that I'm pointing at? Over there, okay. All right, so we made projections of the impact on the state budget of the pension law very soon after it happened in January, the December reforms. We issued two studies, one an update of one you had been reported before about the impact on the Illinois economy, or the possible probable impact in the Illinois economy of the tax rate changes, and then another one. I love titles. I love the Economist magazine and captions and so on. The title talking about the scarlet letter for Illinois, the extra penalty Illinois pays for its bad fiscal reputation on top of things that can be explained by cross state studies. When were the bonds issued and that sort of thing. And indeed, there is an extra penalty of reputation to the state, which visits on the university, as was clearly pointed out. What we're doing right now, we're updating our model annually, so the numbers I'm going to show you are somewhat out of date. In fact, the dismal picture I'm going to show you is optimistic compared to where I think things are going with the numbers that are starting to come into my office, but I don't have a new model yet. We're also going to do something the state's never had, which is do a debt capacity study, which some states do. That'll be coming out maybe February, March. My favorite thing, but something I never have the time to work on, is trying what we call the Budget Transparency Initiative, trying to identify opportunities for making the Illinois state budget process more easily understood and involve more multi-year planning. So some best practices stuff, but that's more of a, anyhow. So to the economic overview. We'll stick with the unemployment rate as one, and as I will show you, rather flawed, but one most commonly used indicator of economic activity. Unemployment rate has been coming down in Illinois, 2.5% in the last 12 months. Coming down in the United States, but not quite to Illinois has not come down to the federal level. Same statistic, but comparing Illinois to nearby states, and you can see that the unemployment rate has come down in all of the states since 2010. Illinois in the last 12 months it has done very well. One and a half percent in these three states and the U.S., but 2.5% in Illinois. However, there's some problems with the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate is the ratio of the number of unemployed plus the number of unemployed and employed. That denominator is called the labor force. So it's unemployment as a share of the labor force. The problem, if you look down at the lower diagram, the total working age population is divided into three groups, not just those two that make up the labor force. There's not in the labor force, retired, full-time students, and so on. And movement in and out of the labor force can very much complicate your interpretation of the unemployment rate. And that's what's happening here. So your naive belief is that you say, okay, yeah, unemployment went way down in Illinois, great. Naively, you might think that one for one, people are moving across that bottom arrow to the right from unemployed to employed. But the problem is they're not, and they're especially not in Illinois. So quickly looking past that, the labor force, that denominator. Illinois had a sharp decline in its labor force, absolutely and certainly relative to the others, the U.S. and the comparison states, and that means that something different is going on. People are dropping out of the Illinois labor force. Unplanned early retirement, you know, you're 62, you're bummed out by labor market conditions, you know you're not going to be called that. You accept the reduced retirement or whatever, you're 58, 62, that sort of thing. You can leave the state. The smaller the unit of observation, the easier that these flows in and out of the labor force can be in and out of the state's labor force. You stay in school. That's good news for this enterprise, right? You stay in school a year longer because, heck, you're not get a job anyhow. You might as well get the master's. All those things sort of complicate. So remember my naive thing that, say, 10 people are move off the unemployment rolls, that you would expect 10 to be employed. Let's see what the numbers. A little bit of algebra on these two numbers, the labor force and the unemployment rate. So in Illinois, for each 10 people dropping off the rolls, we had only eight people entering jobs, where two were bummed out, forced early retirement, staying home, living off family members' income, that sort of thing, or moving out of state. Not so in our comparisons. In the United States, there was actually, and you expect this, many months into a recovery, that after a few months where things go funny, you have people dropping out everywhere, holding off because they know they're not going to find a job. But then they're drawn back into the labor force. So in the United States, there was a net increase in the labor force. So 12 jobs for each of those 10 that we saw people moving off of unemployment. Michigan and Wisconsin, even better. Indiana, unspeakably better. So, moving on to the employment situation is not good in Illinois. Things are improving overall in the nation, but we're not doing that. Okay, the fiscal overview. Vice President Nora already introduced us to the big thing hanging over us all is this decrease in rates scheduled for January 1, 15. The temporary increase from 3% to 5% goes down to 3.75, and corresponding decline in the corporate rate. What are we? A month and a half from now. Governor Quinn, I'm kind of glad he isn't in the room because I was thinking, how do I edit my language and make all this sound complimentary? But no. He proposed a budget that had extension of that in it, right? However, the General Assembly is not willing to take that up, but they didn't adjust things correspondingly to those lower expected tax revenues. They either thought we're going to have, after the election, a Democratic governor that could give lame ducks some reason to vote for a tax increase or non-decrease, or some other sort of a mid-year adjustment. The 2015 budget, which fiscal year we are now 4.5 months in, was knowingly unbalanced. Technically, through some time shifting of funds from previous years, of spending balances from borrowing from other funds, uh, uh, of of letting the letting the bills pile up to the state and to private sector vendors. So it may have technically balanced, but by what I will argue is the appropriate measure, this budget was knowingly unbalanced. Let me just back up, sir, the principal. You avoid a deficit by either cutting spending or increasing revenues. You fund a deficit on the balance sheet, not the income statement. You fund a deficit by selling assets, which could be fund balances, or increasing liabilities. That's it. I mean, so in this year, we are almost certainly going to have rescissions, other revenue measures, or some accumulation of additional unpaid promises. There hasn't been a lot of planning how to do this, but we're in the middle of a year with enormous uncertainty and fear. So we try and model the state's balance. This is sort of our contribution to try and make sense out of Illinois' fiscal problems. For the last 5 or 6 years, I and others at IGPA have developed this fiscal futures model, which is forward-looking. We saw a lack of that in state budgeting. Broad-based, we found out early on that if you look just at the general funds, within-year transfers or cross-year reassignments, where it's general funds 1 year and some federal funds the next, you could have all sorts of opportunities for clouding what's really going on, or intentionally obscuring what's really going on if you're making the reports. So forward-looking, broad-based, and stressing the structural. So what might technically count to balance the budget isn't necessarily prudent. So when we look at revenues, we don't count some of the things that can be counted. We want sustainable revenues, so we look at the flow of taxes and other receipts and ignore new borrowing, piling up of bills, and other one-time revenue sources that might help you in that year, but tell you that in an underlying sense, you are unbalanced. So, again, what do we project? And again, I'm about to update the end of the month, maybe we'll have something new out. So what we do is we take historical, we divide the budget into 20 revenue categories and 20 spending categories, and we look at the historical of each of those, and then we project spending in the future, and we project those revenues in the future, and they are getting farther and farther behind, or below zero. If you look. The bottom line is just that gap in the upper one. So when we summarize this, we usually take that bottom line and use that as our single measure. Rather than having people sort of estimating how far and apart those black and red lines are, we show the other. So what do we show? Again, with this somewhat out of date version of our model, what we show is this is the same blue line as the other diagram, except we're starting in 14 and moving out 10, 11 years. We see a gap on the order of, let's take 2016, on the order of six and a fraction billion dollars, growing to $13 billion, a little less than a billion a year, because revenues in our model are growing less than spending in our model, based on past trends and tendencies. These trends don't have to hold. Policy choices can be made to stop them. The tax increase or the non-tax decrease is the green line above. It eliminates about half of what we're calling the structural budget gap. And as Vice President North said, we're talking about $2 billion in fiscal 15 because the January 1 tax decrease is midway through the fiscal year, and a full rough and round $4 billion of extra gap in 2016. So, but again, because revenue is growing more slowly in our model than spending, Both of these get worse if you look in out years. Should it pass constitutional muster, about which there is great doubt, the pension reforms passed in December last would, when you're only looking about 10 years out, would only make the situation about $1.5 billion a year better. That's because all of the gains, all of the good things for the state in that pension reform law were backloaded out into years that are off my graph here. The pension reform law, should it pass muster, immediately extinguishes about $20 billion of the $100 billion of unfunded liabilities. That's the big deal. It's not the annual savings to the state of $1.5 billion and $1.5 billion. So if the state is, okay, so let's talk about that other part. So there's more dimensions to the problem than just these flows. Fund balances, estate assets have gone down by selling off revenue flows and diminished fund balances. The unfunded pension obligations, which still has that wonderful round number that we can use, $100 billion. And remember, any attempt to address that, plus the healthcare obligations, plus the unpaid bills or whatever, any attempt to address that in future years comes dollar for dollar out of that future year's revenue and crowds out dollar for dollar any spending in that future year. So these obligations are a huge overhang on the ability of future budgets to deliver services rather than financial transfers. The Supreme Court ruling made us very cautious, avoiding the shifting of healthcare costs, which most who interpret it say that suggests that the pension law, which has the same type of promise, even, could also fail constitutional muster. It's nice to follow the Vice President who does this. The bond ratings are in Illinois are quite poor, worst among states. And then the extra little scarlet letter penalty that we pay on top of that, we, not just the state government, but we, the university, and local governments, who might have nothing to do with the state, but they pay that penalty too. The most recent change in ratings was not a strict change in the rating, but it was a change in the outlook direction. S&P in July changed it from neutral to negative, and it was very, very harsh. I'll put it up. Very harsh about what could happen if this wasn't addressed. And I assert that the state just we're 4.5 months into a budget year which was knowingly unfunded. We don't know how much and how fast we'll be able to change that with a new governor and in terms of votes, old legislature. The state is in peril of future downgrades unless something happens really fast to impress. To impress the ratings agency. So, Illinois is still lagging behind the Midwest. The improvement in unemployment rate has to be balanced against the more than offsetting changes in the labor force. Illinois has a large and growing structural deficit, larger than the full implementation of the higher 5% rate and the pension reform attempt in 13 together could eliminate. It's adding up two of my earlier graphs. And growing. Illinois has huge liabilities, this hangover, this hammer of doom from past deficits, and I already made that point about the crowding out, and we're looking to the ratings agency to tell us if we have to pay even more for whatever borrowing is undertaken. And it's become my custom to end my talks by saying, I am Cassandra, and I approve this message.
Thank you, Dick. Are there any questions?
Is there any good news?
No.
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's a great report.